show. Evan Bray, great to have you here on what's pretty nice day in the province and a pretty nice couple of days ahead. Boy, double-digit temps. In fact, some parts of the province should be up to and maybe even over 20 degrees by tomorrow, by Saturday. So fairly nice conditions. We will see the number of farmers getting into the field over the next week go up exponentially in the province. Maybe a chance of a splash of rain, it looks like, on Sunday in different chunks of Saskatchewan, which, of course, always welcome by farmers no matter what time of the year. Thanks again to our federal election panel. This morning we had a substitute in there. Bronwyn Eyre sat in for John Gormley. John's scheduled just a bit off, but he will be back on Tuesday of next week, which is the day after the election. We will have our three panelists in, Doug Richardson, Kathy Sproul, and John Gormley, to basically review what happened the night before the election will be done, and we will know the results. As the phone lines open here for roughly half an hour this morning, 1-877-332-8255, a couple different things on my mind. I think number one, I'm just curious to know how you're feeling. Are you nervous? Are you confident? A lot of it probably has to do with where your political persuasion lies, but there's been lots talked about. Gosh, I reflect on what we've talked about in the last, 5 weeks since the election's been called. But honestly, we've been talking federal politics for how long now? Every day it finds its way into our discussion. And so I'm curious to know how you're feeling this morning. 1-877-332-8255, the number to call there. The other thing is, we saw yesterday Premier Scott Moe put out a short video on social media where he essentially tipped his hat, although to no one's surprise, where his vote was going to be going.
Policies that ensure Saskatchewan receives fair and equal treatment with other provinces within a strong and united Canada. Only Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives are offering those policies.
So, I mean, it's not a surprise. I would suggest there's no one that would be shocked to know that that's how Premier Moe is planning to vote. It is a bit unique, though, that a premier will come out and endorse a federal candidate. Not unheard of. Not that it's never been done before, but it's a little bit unique. Pierre Poilievre came and spoke to the SAS party convention. I think it was 2023. I know it was in the last couple of years. So SAS party, it was talked about in question period before about where their allegiance or where their connection lies when it comes to the federal election. So again, none of this is a surprise. The question is, does this hurt from a strategic standpoint if the Liberals win? If the Liberals win on Monday, Mark Carney's the prime minister. Does this make a difference? There's an argument to be made. It can't get any worse. There's also, I mean, let's be realistic about this. Politicians understand politics. They understand this. And so many will say, you know, politicians don't hold a grudge on things like this. It shouldn't mean that Canada gets swept further under the rug, or sorry, Saskatchewan gets swept further under the rug just because Scott Moe made this endorsement or this announcement. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. 1-877-332-8255. Where are you at? How are you feeling with the federal election? Phone lines are open for you now. And my first caller, John in White City. Good morning, John. How are you today?
Well, I'm confident on one thing. After the election, no matter who wins, the sun will still come up.
The sun will. You're not seeding yet, are you, John?
No, God, no. I'm retired from that.
Oh, are you? I thought you were still farming.
No, God.
You don't even play farm?
Not even play. Well, some people want me to play farm, but I'm too old.
All right. Well, I didn't think that we'd be seeing cedars out in the White City area just yet. It'll be close.
No, God, no. Not now. Well, even at Momart, it's horrible there.
Yeah. Okay, so what's on your mind today?
You know that report that you talked about in the previous segment?
The Privy Council report?
Yeah, I want to talk about it from a police perspective. You didn't need a report to realize what is going to be happening in the future if this keeps going on. You know what it's like when you get people with poverty, drugs, all that. Their backs are against the wall. They're going to do things that are just going to happen. It's going to be complete chaos. It's going to get worse and worse every year.
How do we fix it?
You know what? We start keeping drug dealers in jail. We give them long terms. We go with what Pierre Poilievre is saying, And I'm sorry, three strikes and you're out. Some cases you shouldn't even get three strikes. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
I mean, you know, I'm not shocked to hear you say that, and I agree with you in many cases. In fact, this whole notion that what Polyev was talking about recently with multiple people that have committed multiple murders and making changes to how they serve those sentences, consecutive versus sentences that are basically commuted together, is, to me, it is the way to go. When we talk about this Privy Council report, it obviously was a topic of conversation we touched on briefly with the Federal Election Panel this morning. I had a good conversation about it yesterday morning with Tom Korski from Blacklocks. You know, I mean, I get it. This report is, it's a bigger report. And so some of the things that are being highlighted, people are accusing conservatives of cherry picking. But the point is, and I had this conversation with coworkers this morning, the point is the language, right? This is called a foresight brief. We know this is not an actual, predictor of the future, but it's an indication. It provides some foresight, and it talks about what Canada in 2040 could look like. Terry Glavin had an article in the National Post yesterday, I believe it was, talking a bit about this and saying that ultimately, number one, this could apply to many different places in the world. We see these challenges everywhere, but all the more reason to try and have policies that attack it and stop the direction that we're going when it comes to owning houses, post-secondary graduation rates, any of those important measures that talk about the overall health and wellness of a country. 1-877-332-8255 is the number. I want to go to Jay in Regina. Good morning, Jay. Thanks for calling in. How you feeling about this election?
Well, I'm a little perplexed by the election, quite frankly, Evan. I heard you talking in your segment about with your panel about the debates, and those were the national debates.
Right.
What happened this week in Regina was the only televised debates for the local candidates. And Regina Louvan and Capel were held on Tuesday night, and both Mr. Scheer and Mr. Steinle showed up for that. Last night, it was Regina Wascana, and Michael Cram didn't show up for the debate. How does the incumbent MP not show up for the only debate in this election?
So what, I'll have to be honest, I didn't realize that. What was the reason given as to why, do you know?
There was no reason given. Hmm. There was no mention of Mr. Cram's absence during the debate at all last night, except for Jeff Walters, who pointed it out on a couple of occasions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing that was interesting, and I heard on the end of your segment that Bronwyn Ayer was talking about, you know, she was disappointed in the lack of a passionate debate about agriculture in this province. When you watched the debate last night, you'll see that the last question was from APAS on agriculture. The NDP, who showed up, couldn't answer it. They said they were going to pass. The Canadian People's Party passed. Liberal Jeff Walters gave the only substantive answer on this. Hmm. How can you have a passionate debate when no one shows up to debate?
No one shows up or doesn't want to chat about the issues. You know, the whole canola thing, and Doug brought up the fact that there was a bit of there was a strategy, a plan put together. I think what I wanted to see there is, and it was stated, I believe Bronwyn might have brought it up, but there was a lot of passion by Mark Carney fighting for, and you felt it. You felt like he was fighting for the auto sector when the talk of tariffs came up. I want to see that same passion. Even if you're not a liberal supporter, let's just say your government, your Canadian government, whoever has been elected in, and prior to this election and prior to this campaign starting, the Liberal government was with Mark Carney at the lead. He took that, assumed that role for about a month before the election actually took place. I wanted to see him passionate about canola. I wanted to hear him talk about the strategy on how they're going to deal with China and these tariffs. And so, yeah, maybe fair enough, the government came up with a plan and a strategy. But sometimes you want to see that passion out of the leader. And so not seeing it, to me, is just another check on the box of why it feels like Western Canada is not getting the same sort of priority, the same sort of attention that we are seeing Eastern Canada, Eastern industries getting? And that's one of my big worries. 1-877-332-8255. The phones are busy this morning, which is great to see. Let's grab another call here before we take our break. James in Saskatoon. Good morning, James. What's on your mind today?
So I want to follow up exactly with what you're feeling, that there's an inequity between how Ottawa executes its capacity to spend and to help, and how we in the West tend to always get lint out of the pockets of Ottawa, right? And I point to nothing no different than the great men and women that work at Vito Intervac. You've probably had some interaction with them over very impressive individuals, very impressive. And in the time of need that we have needed them during COVID, they certainly wanted to step up to the point where Dr. Anderchuk, who was a Saskatoon boy, who was stationed out of the facility out of Winnipeg, the Canadian lead in infectious disease and all of these biometrics, decided to take a sabbatical from the national lab in Winnipeg and actually come to Vito Intervac and work in conjunction with what these brilliant people were doing here. So, okay, I draw this as to directly to your parallel of how the West. So Ottawa comes to Saskatchewan, oh yeah, we're here to help you, we're going to give you $59 million. That sounds kind of like a nice little $59 million. But little did the rest of us ever catch up on and understand that Ottawa also gave $500 million to a Quebec-based company that had absolutely no foundation to any kind of a vaccine rollout or anything else, but they were the people who were in line, and they ran with the same business plan as what Vito Intervac was going to do. But all of a sudden, months later, if not a year later, and the company is bankrupt and non-functional, and here we still have this company, great company in Saskatoon, the little company that could. And that's the appreciation or the lack of appreciation between Ottawa and us in the West. We're always getting lint out of the pocket.
James, appreciate you calling in. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I've got some texts I want to get to. I know I've got a couple of phone calls waiting on the line here as well. Open phones until 10:30 this morning here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Good morning and welcome. Open lines continue. 1-877-332-8255. And as quite often happens when we have a call or a text that comes in with a bit of an unanswered question, someone fills the void. So we had a caller talking about the fact that there was a couple of debates that happened on with regard to local ridings on local TV. So this was a debate in Regina on Access Communications, where my previous caller said Michael Cram, who's the incumbent Conservative MP, didn't show up for the debate. I wasn't aware of that, but not long after that happened, we've actually got a couple of messages that have come from part of Michael Cram's campaign team who said that the request was not received in time. The first they heard about it was after there was a follow-up request why they hadn't heard a response. So by that time, it was too late. Schedules weren't aligned. And then kind of a further question about why have a debate 4 days away from an election date. So seems like a little bit of miscommunication there, but appreciate a couple of people from the Michael Cram group who responded and gave us some context around why that didn't happen. 1-877-332-8255. A number of people weighing in on the Scott Moe endorsement of Pierre Poilievre. Cindy in Saskatoon said, people need to know when good people who make good decisions have made a political one, as that helps those who do not follow politics make wise voting decisions. So yes, it was good that Premier Moe indicated his wisdom, as those who trust him will consider what he said regarding the future of our great country before they vote. Those who do not consider Premier Moe wise likely won't be listening. Cindy, thank you for the text. 1-877-332-8255. I want to go back to the phone lines. I've got Yogi waiting on the line from Moose Jaw. Yogi, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Well, I just talk about the ad that running with endorsement from Stephen Harper. It's kind of funny that Pierre Poilievre would do that. You know, he was two terms in the Stephen Harper government. And how many pipelines did they get built? None.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think the endorsement from Harper helps Poilievre then, Yogi?
No. People know that he never got anything done there, and he won't get anything done now.
You know, it's interesting because when Pierre Poilievre talks about pipelines, he quite openly says, we don't plan on building any pipelines. We plan on changing the process and having policies that are open to investors who will come in and build the pipeline. So that it gets into a bit of a debate. And I'm not suggesting Yogi was saying that the government should build the pipeline, but pipelines get built and energy projects of that magnitude happen when it's attractive for investors and companies to come in and make that sort of investment. And so you talk to people in the oil and gas industry right now, they will say, currently we are anything but a sure investment for investors, given climate policies that are stifling of the oil, gas, and energy industry and the impact that that could have. 1-877-332-8255. Here's a text says, I'm just wondering, I keep hearing that Mark Carney lives the majority of his time in the States. Is this true? Well, I can't say that he didn't live in the States. I mean, obviously he did. He lived over in Britain. I know has moved companies to the States, but, he's not going to be living in the States. Well, he certainly isn't right now. And he won't be, if elected prime minister. That though has been a bit of a knock against Mark Carney. A lot of people feel that he is, not necessarily someone who has had long true roots in Canada. Although, you know, he talks about being born in Western Canada. He's lived in Western Canada and has obviously been a Canadian, but he also holds citizenship elsewhere. But as far as living, actually living, he's living in Canada. Cameron and Regina, you would think Carney would be more passionate about our Western Canadian industries, if only for the fact that Ottawa benefits from the transfer payments produced by those industries. Cameron, thank you for that. The Liberal Party cannot possibly treat Saskatchewan any worse without making the abuse and punishment so completely obvious. Even Doug Richardson could not deny it on your panel this morning, says this texter. 1-877-332-8255. Todd from Big Sky, Montana, who likes to join the conversation with a quick text here. It's always going to be bad for the West unless they get some kind of electoral college so Canadians can all be represented equally. A logical statement from a voice from the States as we wrap up our open line segment here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Well, good morning and welcome to the show. It's Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Thursday morning, a fairly nice day in the province. The weather has been cooperating, which we're loving to see as well. And thank you to everyone that's been texting in. We've had a pretty good, in a short period of time, robust conversation on a variety of things. So Yogi from Moose Jaw shot in a message basically saying, I don't think it's good that, I can't remember how he worded it, that Stephen Harper, that Pierre Poilievre has Stephen Harper endorsing him. Stephen Harper did not build any pipelines. So that sparked a conversation. The point I was trying to make, after Yogi's comments is, you know, do we expect government to build pipelines or do we expect government to get out of the way when it comes to regulation and provide basically an incentivized environment in which investment is encouraged and more likely. So there's a few people that were joining in on that conversation on the text line, and I wanted to look at a couple of those. Rick from Regina does a little bit of research and shows that actually four pipelines were built in Canada between 06 and 15. Enbridge, Alberta Clipper, applied in 07, approved in 08, built in 2010. TransCanada Keystone, applied in 06, approved in 07, built in 2010. Enbridge Line 9B Reversal, applied 2012, approved 14, operational 15. And then Kinder Morgan Anchor Loop, 160 kilometers of pipeline, approved in 06, built in 08. Some good research in a short period of time. Rick, thank you for that, and thank you for joining in. Okay, I'm excited for this next conversation and my next guest on the program today. This is actually a thank you to a listener, because inevitably we will have people that will send a note into the show saying, you know what, here's a really good idea for a topic. Here's a really good idea for someone you should talk to. So John in Melfort reached out to us saying, I just read a book called Dark Traffic. Dark Traffic, the name of the book, The Dangerous Intersection of Technology, Crime, Money, Sex, and Humanity, written by Noel Thomas, the founder of Dark Watch. He says, John says, this organization doing some major work when it comes to fighting human trafficking. He would be great to have on your show. So, John in Melfort, thanks for the tip. Reading a book and saying, hey, you should get this person on the show. Now, human trafficking, obviously, we've talked about this topic on the show a number of times. In my career as a police officer, we dealt with this. We saw the dangers of it. We saw the complexities of it. And that's why I'm so excited for this conversation today. Joining us by phone, Noel Thomas, founder of Dark Watch, author of Dark Traffic, The Dangerous Intersection of Technology, Crime, Money, Sex, and Humanity. Noel is joining us this morning by phone. Noel, thanks for taking the call.
Oh, thank you, Evan, for having me on the show. It's a real honor and pleasure.
I've actually watched a couple of interviews you've done, and you can feel your passion on this topic. Where does your passion come from on the topic of eradicating human trafficking?
Well, Evan, I often say that this passion started as a child, and our family was walking in this indoor market in a really nice town. You know, this stuff rarely goes on, or so we thought. And my dad gets kind of bumped and distracted by this lady. When he looks down, he sees that my four-year-old sister has gone missing, and he trusts his instincts and runs towards the exit of this building where a man we didn't know was walking out the door with my sister. Jeez. My dad's able to recover my sister at the very last second, and the man runs off. And so that left a very deep impression on me. From there, I went to India, and I saw this 14-year-old girl being trafficked right above a police station. And as cliche as it is, that quote by Edmund Burke, where he said that all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing, struck me. And this has been now 15 years in the industry, got the book published, got to speak at the United Nations, but realized that there wasn't a lot of technology to help fight human trafficking at scale. And that's where we saw the opportunity to start bringing this technology to turn the curve of the 50 million that are enslaved around the world.
Well, I look forward to talking in a moment here about the work that you're doing, but can we just talk about human trafficking for a second and how it has changed, how it has grown, what industries are involved in human trafficking? Because I know that's a big part of the work that you do.
Absolutely. So human trafficking, and I was shocked to find this out in 2007, is it was $150 billion at the time. Now it's $236 billion, according to the International Labor Organization. And what is happening here is that criminals and organizations are realizing that it's highly lucrative to sell human beings. In fact, if you think about it, you can only sell that drug or weapon one time, but you could sell a victim of sex trafficking up to 20 times per day. And so what you're seeing is that these organized crime groups, criminal enterprises, are moving into a very lucrative business. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is that human trafficking touches 30 different industries. And some industries oftentimes are unaware that they're directly facilitating human trafficking. A couple examples of that are hospitality and transportation. But some of the non-obvious is food and beverage and maybe hotels or payment processing and even banks. And so Each of these industries play a very important role in the fight against human trafficking because human traffickers have to rely on these industries to move their illicit products from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many opportunities for the industries to do something meaningful in the fight against human trafficking.
Noel Thomas is my guest, founder of Dark Watch, and you can find them on the web, by the way, darkwatch.io. Also author of a great book, which one of our listeners recommended, Dark Traffic, The Dangerous Intersection of Technology, Crime, Money, Sex, and Humanity. Really, this is modern-day slavery is what we're talking about, yeah. Noel.
That's exactly right, you know, and like most people, when I saw it face to face in India, I thought, all right, this problem is only in some other country. But what I've come to realize is that this is in our backyards, and it doesn't matter your socioeconomic status. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're in. And we think that in North America broadly, that we're immune from this type of modern day slavery. And the fact is that we are in a stage of modern day slavery that is more aggressive, more brutal than it ever has been in history, and is only growing because of the economics behind it.
Can we talk a little bit about the work that you and your team do and how you assist, whether it's law enforcement, victim advocates, and victims and survivors in general when it comes to human trafficking? Can you give us a sense of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a data and analytics company, and we go out broadly over the web and in other areas to collect really meaningful data that shows trends, it shows hot spots, it shows problem areas. And we've created a network of NGOs and industry to come together to share information on the trends and things that they're seeing, but also to provide services to the survivors. And if you think about this issue from a 360 view, it's not only stopping the perpetrators and the traffickers themselves, but it's giving access to services for these survivors who have been traumatized and that maybe need job skills to be reintegrated into society. And so there's a lot of different elements of the fight against human trafficking that we assist and encourage a collaboration and unification of everyone that's providing kind of their unique service to ending modern day slavery.
So I'm curious because the work you're doing is revolutionary works. And I know that in many ways you're somewhat careful about not completely revealing everything, but are you finding that the way you're doing this through the use of data analytics is number one, helpful to law enforcement, and number two, embraced by law enforcement? Do you see them reaching out and using you as an equal partner in their investigations?
Absolutely, because we are direct support to them. And what's great is that we're a force multiplier to the efforts that they do that we could never do. So we could never put out a wire or conduct in-person surveillance or conduct a raid or do an arrest, right? And nor would we want to. We want to work within the systems of justice. And conversely, there's some things that we've got that is truly revolutionary for them that speeds up the investigation. And an example of this is, in a prior life, I was the statewide anti-human trafficking coordinator in Florida. And so I worked with several federal and local task forces and even got the opportunity to go out on a raid. What I noticed was that they were using manual methods to hunt through sites like Craigslist to find the intelligence. And so that was an easy problem to solve very broadly without going into too much details, where we could create scraping and automation that would speed that process up. And that's really the name of the game for law enforcement, is how do we make their workflows and their jobs more efficient? And when we're kind of both working in our specialties, that's where the synergy happens together. And that's where they get very excited.
You know, Noel, I think there's a really good argument for why police should be using agencies like yours to assist in these investigations. It's expensive to do this work. It's specialized expertise that often, I would argue, shouldn't and doesn't necessarily need to be included in a police budget when it could be brought in by an outside agency. I'm curious to know if, as well as being reactionary and helping conclude cases, hold people accountable, find survivors and victims, is there a role that you can play in almost a more predictive analytic sense in preventing these things from happening?
Absolutely. So through geotemporal analysis, which is just a fancy way of saying changes over time in a certain geography, you most certainly can see if the efforts that you're doing is causing a downward trend on the scoreboard. And there's other things that in predictive analytics that are really helpful. Part of the problem is that there's so much to be done that it becomes overwhelming. And we don't want that to be the case. So with predictive analytics, you can start to build the cases that make most sense for your organization. You could go by the worst offenders. You could go by asset size of the organization. You could go by confidence of getting the conviction. So there's a lot of ways that the predictive analytics could help triage the workflow so that everything is not on fire. You could actually take very targeted motions towards a case.
Noel Thomas is my guest, founder of Dark Watch, an organization doing incredible, groundbreaking, revolutionary work when it comes to human trafficking. Also the author of a book named Dark Traffic, The Dangerous Intersection of Technology, Crime, Money, Sex, and Humanity. My experience is that human trafficking investigations are complex, complicated, and challenging. I'm going to give you two challenges, and I want you to talk about how they affect the work you do. Number one, no boundaries. You can't say we're only going to do work in Chicago or Toronto or Regina, Saskatchewan. Often, like internet child exploitation, it billows out into something that is a global challenge and investigation. The other one being, often the victims are very vulnerable, and it's not quite as simple as swooping in and rescuing someone who maybe doesn't have a family waiting to support them or the ability to plug back into society. So can you talk about those challenges with the work that you do?
Yes. So we come across that all the time. And the beautiful thing is that we've already got the mechanism, at least in the United States, from the war on terror and the war on drugs, is that we've got the ability to use tax evasion, RICO racketeering. But mainly what this boils down to is that it's more than just a human crime. It's a financial crime. And by approaching it as a financial crime, it removes the burden from the victim to be re-traumatized or have to tell their story, or that the whole case hinges on the testimony of the victim, which is oftentimes picked apart by the defense attorneys. And so this kind of new wave of fighting this is thinking about human trafficking as a financial crime. The other part that you mentioned about it being no boundaries is absolutely, absolutely true. And it crosses state lines, but there are tools for better communication and synergy and collaboration that we're putting into the market to help alleviate that cross-boundary problem, which is a very real challenge. I would agree those are problems, but there's workable solutions.
For sure. Noel Thomas is my guest. We're pretty much out of time, but just in closing, what do you envision in a positive change or a trend in the future? How do we get there?
I think that when we're able to come together and utilize the resources in a public-private partnership, and there's synergy in the technology in line with the workflows of law enforcement and in line the workflows of banks and hotels and transportation. And when we start to look at the industry of human trafficking and the logistics that support it, we can turn the tide, and especially through automation and AI, we can fight this at scale.
This has been a great chat. Congrats on the success so far, Noel, and keep up the great work. We appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, sir. Have a great great afternoon.
Noel Thomas, founder of Dark Watch, author of the book Dark Traffic, the work that they are doing on human trafficking. Quite impressive. If you want to check it out online, darkwatch.io is the name of their website. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks again to Noel Thomas, founder of Dark Watch, author of the book Dark Traffic, a great discussion on the innovative work that they are doing on human trafficking and how they're using AI and basically open source information that is not, it's available openly on the web, and how they bring that together and ultimately help law enforcement in cracking some of these cases. We've got an interesting talk topic coming up, and basically how you trust your gut feeling on something. It's somewhat aligned with this topic we just did on human trafficking, and I look forward to that discussion with you coming up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.